views and opinions expressed by hosts, invited speakers, and callers do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of the Black Talk Media Project or the Black Talk Radio Network.
We do whatever we do to survive.
Drop it!
The rhythm, the rebel.
Don't believe the hype.
Yes.
Show them that we can do this.
Here we go again.
Good evening and welcome to tonight's broadcast of Political Prisoner Radio. My name is Scotty Reed, of course, riding shotgun. It's Sister Mijo Whitlock, and welcome to Political Prisoner Radio again. Broadcasting on the Black Talk Radio Network. Today's date is April 19th, 2015. On this Sunday night. Sister Mijo, how are you tonight?
Oh, we're enraged down here in Baltimore. Should I say up here in Baltimore? The police have murdered a 27-year-old Freddie Gray, and they beat him to death and, severed his spine. He fought in the hospital for a week. And he succumbed to his injuries this morning, and his attorney put out a statement at 7 o'clock this morning. So there are people in the community protesting yesterday, today, and there's another rally scheduled for tomorrow morning.
I know I've been reading about that story and reported on it on Black Talk Radio News when it first occurred, and it was reported he was in ICU. But I do have some audio from some rallies that was held. But I do believe we are joined by someone. I'm not sure who called in from area code 917. Who do we have on the line? Or is that 718? I'm sorry.
718. This is Ann.
Hey,
Lamb.
That's Ann.
Oh,
yeah, you're doing it,
Mitchell. Hi, Ann.
Hey.
Yeah, I was just in to report on that hearing yet, the oral arguments for Jaleel, you know, on the 16th. So I didn't want to interrupt anything else because it sounded like what Mitchell was saying is really important.
Oh, no, you're not interrupting anything, but we are going to talk about police violence and brutality in general, but since she's in Baltimore, you know, they just had this heinous killing of this young man, and they're short on answers. And we know that many of the political prisoners and prisoners of war became radicalized because of police terrorism in their
Absolutely.
Communities. So it's very important. But no, we don't want to keep you waiting. Please share the update, and you're updating us about Brother Jaleel Montekin.
Yeah, Jaleel Montekin, there were oral arguments in his case on Thursday at the Second Circuit Court of Appeals in 40 Foley Square. And this is a case, you know, that he's been pursuing for 13 years, since 2003, because it's called Bottom v. Pataki. And Pataki was the governor two governors ago.
Mm-hmm.
And it was interesting because the attorney who was representing Jaleel, his name is Malik Havlik. And he works for a firm called Hughes Hubbard. Now, they were appointed by the court because Jaleel is actually pro se on this, but they weren't going to bring him to court. So he argued really well, I mean, especially considering he was a court-appointed, you know, lawyer. It's not like he was somebody we picked out. He sounded like us. You know, he had his 10 minutes. We had three judges. It's a three-judge panel. There's a guy named Ralph Winter. He wasn't even there. He just appeared on a video screen. And then
who wasn't there? Jaleel?
No, well, Jaleel was not there at all. No, they didn't bring Jaleel.
Okay.
We knew Jaleel wasn't going to be there. You know, we knew that ahead of time. One of the judges wasn't even actually there.
Oh, okay,
right?
I'm sorry.
He was there, but not physically there. You know, they had him in on a video link.
And can you explain the issues with this specific case?
Oh, yeah, the issue with this specific case is that there's two things. One is an ex post facto, what they call an ex post facto application of the law, And the parole law in New York State as it currently stands, which is horrible, was the current law was passed in 1978. Now, it should not be applied to people who were sentenced before then, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Jaleel was sentenced in 1977, right? So that part of his argument is that this law should not apply to him.
Retroactively.
Right? Retroactively, exactly. So that was part of the argument. And another part of the argument, and I love this lawyer because he sounded just like us, was the predetermination, you know, of the parole hearing, because it is like a predetermined outcome, because
mm-hmm.
if every time you go to the board, they hit you with quote-unquote nature of the crime, which is never going to change.
Right.
You know, the nature of the crime is the nature of the crime, well, you know, of which we're not saying he's even guilty, but according to them, he is. You know, but you can't, you know, and our lawyer said, you know, well, if he was sentenced to 25 to life, then why is it de facto being imposed upon him that he's getting life without parole? Because, you know, it's a predetermined outcome. Every time you go to the board, they hit you with nature of the crime, you know, at that time, definitely. You know, now they've changed the language a little bit, but it's still the same thing. And so the three judges were interesting because two of them were sort of, you know, actually listening and asked some good questions. And then this guy Winter, who was, you know...
Right, so basically, Ann, he has served his time.
Oh, he has more than served his time.
Yes.
I mean, if he was sentenced to 25 to life in 1977, then
right.
that means he should have been out in, what, 2002. Right?
Right.
So he's had 13 years already added to his sentence.
Right.
As well as his co-defendant Herman has had years added to his sentence. And Robert Cetes has had years added to his sentence. You know, so, and everybody else has too. Now, Abdul Majid is going actually to the board on Monday for the first time. So we'll see what happens with that. He said he's not expecting anything, but, you know, he does have a whole parole packet prepared. And we have written letters for him, so we'll see what happens with that. But, you know, they argued a lot of legal stuff, so I was writing it down, you know, categorical violation of due process, right? Then they, you know, cited some other cases that I'll have to go look up. And the guy for the state, whose name is Hot Vet, he was, you know, constantly saying, well, how is this different from Graciano v. Pataki? Because that was a class action that they basically dismissed. You know, they never really wanted to hear that case because they would have had to release probably thousands of people in New York State.
Wow, certainly they don't want to damage reduce the prison slave population. They don't want to do that because judges are, in my opinion, in on it. I mean, they're a major part of it.
Of course, they're part of it. But at least, you know, two of them asked good questions and seemed mm-hmm. to actually, you know, consider something about this because they, of course, reserved their decision. And I just spoke with Jaleel this morning, and he was like, well, you know, hopefully they'll decide by, like, September. And I said, well, hopefully, but, you know, they don't have to give you any time. They just reserve their decision. And, but, you know, our lawyer was very good. He argued really well. You know, he was quite impassioned about it. And then the state guy got his little 10 minutes, and he was like, you know, the whole Graziano v. Pataki thing. And then our lawyer got to come back on for another 3 minutes, like, just to, you know, respond to that. And then he talked about the whole ex post facto application of the law. So, and then the judges did ask some good questions about that. So hopefully, you know, we can never, you know, I agree with you, they're a whole part of the system. But that doesn't mean that as individuals, they might possibly make a correct decision.
Right, like in the case of Sundiata Coley, what the lower courts ordered, you know, that he had served his time under what, New Jersey law?
Right. He had served his full punitive sentence, is what
mm-hmm.
they said.
Mm-hmm.
And now, you know, now he's still sitting inside because they're not going to release him until the Supreme Court.
Which is hearing the case now, right?
Right. The New Jersey Supreme Court is now going to mm-hmm. decide to hear the case.
Mm-hmm.
And he will be, you know, held in prison until they either hear the case or decide not to hear the case. But I think they have decided to hear the case. So we'll have to see what happens with that, because this goes back to the same thing that's involved in all of these cases.
Right.
Is, you know, the political influence of the Fraternal Order of Police, the Patrolmen's Benevolent Association, the CO Patrolmen's Benevolent Association, and so on and so forth. The Detectives, you know, Association, all these people. They have very undue weightiness. They publicize all kinds of horrible articles in all kinds of newspapers, you know, about our prisoners and, you know, what they're accused of and how they're horrible, violent thugs. It's all taken totally out of context. Nobody's talking about the fact about the rampant police brutality that was happening then as well.
Right. I was just thinking that as you were speaking, I was going to bring up, you know, with the whole Black Lives Matter movement and the increased public scrutiny on police terrorism that, you know, I know it's on purpose, but the mainstream, of course, we can't expect them to make the connections. But that's why I said earlier, it's important for us to make the connection that many of the political prisoners and prisoners of war today were radicalized by this very same evil
exactly,
that persists
right.
to this day.
The very same
well,
condition.
I would say they were already radicalized, but they became militarized. After all mm-hmm. aspects of nonviolent struggle were exhausted, you know, people were forced to
that's a good point.
Take certain action.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know. I mean, specifically, we know that the police murder of Fred Hampton and Mark Clark caused the Weather Underground to declare war on the United States. So, you know, we have to be, you know, very clear in our understanding about, you know, how this has been, you know, a long, you know, protracted struggle. And this is just another, you know, battle, you know, in the war that this current millennial generation, you know, has now come into.
But let's talk about it in terms of the generational differences, because it's certainly been decades. Many of the political prisoners in their 40 plus years, suffering right. under horrendous, you know, conditions, solitary confinement and other medical neglect, as, you know,
yes.
we see with Mumia right now. But today though.
I call that medical murder. That's
right.
Medical murder.
Now, I would say back when they were sentenced to their, prison, when they were given their trials and whatnot. But today, we have, I guess, would you say social media gives us a tool? Of course it gives us a tool that they did not have. But I think social media has really been a tool in showing just how evil the police are and how the police unions operate. And now their propaganda can no longer just go out unchecked. Now there are checks on it.
Right. Well,
right.
I think
absolutely.
That people can film and video is really mm-hmm. helpful. I mean, that young man who was an undocumented immigrant who filmed that, you know, cop shooting a man in the back 8 times, you know, and then planting the taser on him, you know, he afterwards was like a little scared because, you know, he's not even a documented person in this country. And
really?
And, you know, he was very brave. You know, he came forward, he showed it to the family. You know, he's been interviewed on several now, you know, different TV stations and radio stations, which is good because that'll give him some protection. But, you know, he saw it going down and he decided to, you know, take out his cell phone and film it.
Well, you know what?
And,
you know what
you
makes
know,
him brave?
If he hadn't done that, we would not have known.
You know what makes him brave, in my opinion, is not the fact that he turned it in, but the fact that he first said he wasn't going to do it. He was just
right.
going to delete it because he was afraid, because of that fear. And then after some thought and talking to one of his buddies, he decided to go down to the police station alone, which was a mistake. And thankfully, you know, his sense came to him and he hurried up and got out of there and then sought out the family. So, I mean, I think that it took extraordinary courage to overcome his fear.
Oh, of course. And even the filming of it, you know, I mean, they could have turned around and shot him.
That's true.
You know, who's to say they wouldn't have done that, you know? And,
right. Well, look what just happened with Ramsey Orta.
With Ramsey Orta, how they framed him up on something else because he dared to film, you know, Pantaleo choking Eric Garner to death.
Right. Well, even with Ramsey Orta, you know, and his liberation fund, you know, they had initially denied him his freedom of bail by trying to claim that the finances behind it were from, you know, I don't know the exact words that the court system used, but they tried to make it seem like, you know, the money wasn't like green or it wasn't valid. And
what, like it was drug money or something?
Yeah.
They did finally let him out on bail, but they did, like, they had to go investigate because they're not used to this kind of, you know, as you were saying about the social media, you know, an online site where people could give some little bits of money. So once they saw but they pretend they don't know. So, you know, that was their excuse.
Right, like, because they're used to, like,
of course, they use it all the time. But, you know, they like to pretend
they
that they're ancient,
their,
you know.
Right. Yeah, they just, GoFundMe and some of the other sites wouldn't take funding or support for the officer that killed Walter Scott. But I know that there was an Indiegogo page or something like that. I don't know if that's still up.
No, they took it down.
Oh, they took that one down too?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, you know, there is...
Which again points to the power of social media in the public.
Exactly.
To put pressure on people.
Right.
No,
well,
I think it's a great help, but we do have to draw those connections between, you know, our political prisoners. You know, many of them were forced by circumstances to go underground. They had no other alternative. You know, if they lived in their homes, they could be raided by the police. If they were in their office, you know, Panther office, you know, many of those were attacked. You know, that's why a lot of them did go underground and form the Black Liberation Army, which had a totally legitimate, you know, reason to exist.
Mm-hmm.
Because back in the 70s, here in New York City, you know, when these cops were shooting people, they had to worry about maybe somebody's going to shoot back. You know, now they don't even seem to be, they're still scared, but they're not, nobody's even shooting at them. You know, I mean, even that.
Well, there actually has been a few.
Shoot at them, and they were so scared. I saw that video. I said, man, these cops are cowards. You know, they were like hiding behind the police cars and everything else. I mean, not to say it doesn't happen, but it's not as widely known as it was back in the day.
Because, you know, look at Pennsylvania. You had the guy up there who, sniped at the two state patrolmen. You know, he had scoped them out. Eric Friend, I think his name was, and we've heard of others, and some of them could be actually secret ops. We don't know, you know, but I think there is an increase. I'm starting to see more of an increase in retaliation against cops. I don't want to call it violence. I'm going to call it retaliation because people are afraid.
When people retaliate against brutality and violence, that is not violence. The people who cause the violence are the ones who are violent.
Right.
Shooting a man in the back 8 times while he's running away is extremely violent. You know, choking a man to death in broad daylight is extremely violent. You know,
breaking somebody's spine and damn near severing their head from their body. Extremely violent. So
extremely
I don't
violent.
Think that anything that the only thing that, you know, as far as the community perspective, would be self-defense.
Exactly.
You know, and it's disgusting and it's completely shameful down here in Baltimore that in the midst of, you know, Freddie Gray being beat to death, Department of Justice is here, you know, the Maryland State Legislature, you know, failed to pass any comprehensive laws in a whole package of bills associated to police brutality. And, you know, what are the people to do at that point where every means of, you know,
you done prostrated yourselves in the street with your hands up. I mean, come on, begging the oppressor to stop killing you, and they continue to do it. You know, again, with increased public scrutiny through social media and alternative media, and the mainstream is forced. So hundreds of millions, the whole world knows about police terrorism, in this country. So, again, you know, who's to say how another man should resist or another, you know, person should resist this onslaught?
Well, you know, that's why it's called the Black Panther Party for Self-Defense.
Right.
You know, there was a reason for that. You know, it was for community defense. You know, when they used to do the community patrols. Now we have people who do something similar, Cop Watch. you know, they go out and film. So that's another weapon of choice, is the camera. And that happens to be a very good weapon of choice.
And I heard some people say that cameras won't make any difference whatsoever. Like, we're seeing a movement to get all of these cops fitted with body cams. Do you feel like that will make a difference? I mean, nobody can.
That's not going to make any difference. First of all, it's scary because the cops actually want that. So that means something already. That's
you
bad.
Think they want that?
Oh, a lot of them have said they actually want it. And B, they're in control of the camera. So if they decide they're going to do something that, you know, is totally illegal and wrong, they can just turn it off.
But what about some of the studies from statistics we do have with cities who have already implemented body cams and have so for a number of years? They do show a reduction in police. Again, it doesn't stop it totally, but it I guess it puts it, you know, a question in the cop's mind. Yeah, I'm being recorded here, so they say from the report that brutality reports have actually gone down in those cities. So I'm like, wait, let's wait and see.
The question for me, Scotty, is that I've looked at some of those studies, and one of the things that's most touted is the Palo Alto piece.
Okay.
And
yeah, that's the one.
It,
that's the one.
Right. But when I looked at it, it wasn't a full-on implementation. It was actually research. So, you know, researching, you know, the usage of the body cameras is much more than a full-blown implementation. And some of the places that have begun implementing body cameras, these regions are not the localities that have the history, you know, of killing, you know, Black, Brown, and Indigenous people.
Right, like New York,
so,
like
right,
Baltimore,
right,
like Philly.
Right.
Boston.
Right.
Boston,
mm-hmm. Detroit.
Right. So there really isn't an actual, you know, history here that one could go on.
I understand.
I do question when, you know, police departments, big national pro-police policy organizations are actually, you know, promoting the body cameras and the usage of the body cameras. And it's just another form of militarization because people in the military have the same technology, you know.
Right.
So this would just be additional technological upgrades. And one of the issues here in Maryland during the legislative session was, okay, if there's going to be the usage of body cameras, how do we, you know, corral, you know, that video, and how would that video violate one's civil rights? Because essentially, you know, if you're knocking on my door for any kind of reason, as soon as I open it, you see everything in plain sight, you know, where historically, you know, certain information wasn't, you know, readily available or could not be necessarily used. So, you know, on issues of like search and seizure and things like that. So there are some major issues, you know, across the board. I'm not for body cameras. There's been multiple deaths. Yeah, I mean, there's been multiple deaths across the country caught on video, and still none of these police, you know, have been charged, tried, and prosecuted, and are, you know, none of them are in jail. Not a one of them. I mean, anywhere from when,
well, there have been a few, Sister Amijo. The guy, Walter Scott, that resulted in that man's arrest, and, the one with the man where they killed Eric Harris in Tulsa, the, reserve deputy, which is a frightening story, because now you got rich people who can pay to play in the streets and go on safari. But there have been some.
But no,
but I think
the
biggest failure has been to
right.
indict by these
right.
grand juries.
Right. I'm saying the whole process. Charged, tried, convicted.
Right.
You know, because
okay.
in a lot of these cases, you know, at a certain point, you know, even though we get the indictment, you know, that doesn't mean an ending conviction, and it doesn't mean jail time, you know.
Right.
Even with...
Right.
Well, even with the issue of Oscar Grant, you know, and what happened in his case, and even, you know, the disgusting fact that his Department of Justice civil rights case is still open after more than 5 years.
Wow,
you
is
know?
It?
Ridiculous. Yeah.
Yeah, 6 years now. It's
wow.
open. And the fact that, you know, the DOJ is even here in Baltimore, and there was a community meeting a few days ago, you know, there was just a dog and pony show. You know, it's just bullshit. How are you going to come to, you know, the community and ask us, oh, well, what do you think that we could do to stop the Baltimore police from, you know, killing and beating and taking people's lives? No, that's your job. You're supposed to be telling us what you're going to do, you know, for the right. citizens of Baltimore, not be asking us, like, oh, well, what do you think some of the things that could be changed? Come on now.
Arrest these cops and put them in prison.
You know, I mean, from just basic issues of misconduct, corruption, the whole shit up and down the chain. You know, investigate the mayor, investigate the commissioner, investigate these criminal-ass coroners, you know, that are lying and covering up all this police brutality that's happening across the country. We can't leave them out of it because these
right.
coroners, they're all lying. They are all lying, you know, to cover up police misconduct. They're in line with it, you know, and it's disgusting that they are violating their own, you know, codes and ethics to be in line with whatever the police department.
I don't think they have any codes of ethics. I don't think they have any. I mean,
well, they're supposed to. You know,
we're looking at a culture.
I have to run because I have to go be on a conference call, but good luck to both of you, and thank you so much for having me on, and keep up the good work.
All right, and you do the same,
a lot of people here in New York who listen to your show every week, and they're like, oh, yeah, we heard you on Political Prison Radio. Oh, we love that show. I said, yes, I do, too.
thank
thanks,
you.
Sam.
Just so you know, okay?
Okay, thank you. All right, we're just about here to come up on our break. I do want to give the phone number out so that if you have any political prisoner news or you want to comment on some of the current headlines, you can do so by giving us a call at 704-951-5030. That's 704-951-5030. We'll take this short break and then we'll come back. I want to play this clip of the protests that are ongoing in Baltimore over the murder of Freddie Gray. We'll be right back.
Are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
And welcome back to Political Prisoner Radio. I'm going to go ahead and cue up this video of protests that have been ongoing up there in Baltimore. You want to lead us in? Sister Whitlock, again, just give some people some background information on what's going on in your city.
Well, last week, in the Western District, the police stopped, 27-year-old Freddie Gray. And by the time they had taken him to the Eastern District station, they had wound up calling, you know, for emergency medical intervention, and it was made known that Freddie was basically beaten to death and his spine severed at his neck by 80%. Freddie had been fighting for his life over the last week and succumbed to all the injuries from his encounter with the Western District Police. He passed 7 o'clock this morning.
Now, I have seen the video, and I don't see them beating him in the video, but it appears he had a broken leg, as one of the commenters on the video was saying, and they just drug him and threw him in the back of a paddy wagon.
Right.
And threw him in the back. And it was sometime in between there and transport to what? To jail that he sustained this attack and these injuries.
Yes.
I mean, did they beat him up in the back of this thing or what?
Well, that's where a lot of the questions remain, that yes, there was a video that showed that he had been beaten prior to being put into the back of the paddy wagon.
Okay.
That in a lot of situations, people don't know when you're put in the back of a paddy wagon, when you're handcuffed, whether it's just by your hands or by your feet as well. You're not strapped in. So, you know, there were claims today in the mayor's press conference that there are seatbelts and all these other things.
No, they're not, because I was in a paddy wagon about 2 months ago. So,
right. So she lied, and Commissioner Betts also lied. And for people who don't know, the current commissioner in Baltimore City is Anthony Betts. Anthony originally comes from Long Beach in Oakland, and he has the blood of Oscar Grant and many others on his hands. When he was initially chosen for the commissioning position here, we did not want him here.
Just more bad cops.
History.
Bad
right,
cops
exactly.
being, you know, all they do is just take their show on the road, get in
right,
trouble,
cycle,
get fired,
right.
whatever. At one
right.
place, you just go to another.
Right, exactly. And they cycle, and that's the history, you know, of people and law enforcement.
One more question before I run this video. The last thing that I read, and I actually wrote an article about it, but I couldn't find any information on what he was being detained or arrested for in the first place. I mean, there's no,
right.
has there been a release of a charging sheet? Did they ever charge him with a crime?
Well, this is, right. Well, see, this is one thing that was very disgusting this afternoon with the mayor's press conference. First of all, they looked shook. And they couldn't even look into the cameras, and they were fumbling and mumbling all over their words and lying, you know, contradicting, you know, their own statements, contradicting each other. And then one of the members of the police department, you know, trotted out the, you know, policies of, you know, police being questioned and the law enforcement officers' Bill of Rights crap. And one of the things they were stating that they wanted to, you know, look into if there were any, you know, criminal prosecutions or criminal charges, you know, regarding Freddie Gray. And, you know, like, that's another slap in the face. You know, this man is deceased. And here you have the police claiming that the encounter started with the allegation of, you know, him being engaged in a low-level street drug crime, economic crime. But there's no indication at all that he was even involved in anything.
That's just what they say.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So that is the insinuation now.
Right. Like Romarley Graham. Just like
right.
Romarley Graham in New York. Oh, we saw you buy some weed, and we're going to break into your grandmama's house and run upstairs
right.
and gun you down in the bathroom.
Right.
Yeah.
So that is the current, you know, allegation from, you know, the Baltimore City Police Department. But, you know, it's known here in Baltimore, D.C., and other places where, you know, police do this stuff that they call basically jump out, you
mm-hmm.
know, where the police could be riding down the street and, you know, you just be a typical black man walking down the street in Baltimore and they will just jump out on you. You know, and try to pat you down and get your information, you know, send you on your way. In other places, you know, that would be likened to the idea of a stop and frisk. But here, you know, it's called a jump out.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to run this post that Sister Tawanda Jones had shared, this video mm-hmm. that was posted by Global Rev Robert Bune, independent journalist with Global Ref Live. And this is, some of the protests, a rally that took place at the Baltimore, police station today.
We want peace.
He ain't deserve that.
That's right.
He ain't deserve that.
Killed Freddie.
Anytime you put your hands up as a man, he ain't deserve that.
25 unaccountable minutes.
He ain't deserve that.
Him. 25 accountable minutes. How long did they have?
42.
It was 42 unaccountable minutes. What did they do to him in that 42 minutes? They killed him. That's what they do.
They tell us the cameras don't work in the projects, but when we shooting dice, They can see all that.
They killed him. We want justice.
We do the time. We do our crime now. Time. What about
that? That's right. They keep talking about gangs. The police is the biggest gang in Baltimore City. The police is the biggest gang because they got justice to kill.
Sunday, when we walked down here and knocked on this door, around 9 o'clock, they pulled off in 849. That wagon was in there. Why ain't nobody come to the door when we was banging on the door, kicking on the door? Why ain't nobody come to the door? That's what I want to know. They was in there. They was open.
Why ain't nobody come to the door?
They come and take one of us in there.
They
come to take one of us in that motherfucker.
They was asking why would you not
come to the door? That's right. They was
doing right. During that time, they was open. When they was in there trying to cover that shit up. Feel me?
We want justice. 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 We want justice.
Who do these parties want to support? Where is the leadership? You've been non-responsive. You have not heard anything from the police.
It's been a whole week.
Seven days ago, we watched y'all throw this young man into the back of a damn
bag
and break his neck. And now you're telling me we got a police commissioner that cannot come out here and speak to us? That's some bullshit.
Hands up, don't shoot. 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 Hands up, don't shoot.
Community. We are outraged. We are angry. But there is still a way to organize to fight the forces that be. We have to take order. There must be order in every movement, or else you just sound like you yelling and screaming and nothing will happen. So we should get away from these police cars because you cannot fight one cop. It is a system.
The police department gave us no answer. Anthony Anderson was killed. The police department gave us no answer. When George King was killed, they gave us no answer. So we're saying we want justice. We want justice now. We live here. We've been fighting for justice for too long. And we're saying that we want justice. We can't afford to walk away. We can't afford to walk away.
It will not happen.
Today is Freddie Gray. Tomorrow
is Coming out your colleagues of the racist police. And we ain't gonna stop till our people are free.
And again, that was from a rally that was held today at Baltimore Police Department. Sister Meacham, any thoughts?
I mean, we're sick and tired of being sick and tired here in Baltimore. You know, same thing with brothers and sisters around the country. And you know, the West family has been out in the forefront of leading this movement against police terrorism and genocide for the last 2 years. And we have not had, you know, one arrest in our movement here. There have been some other situations around the region where activists and organizers have been attacked by police, you know, engaging in Black Lives Matter movement work. But, you know, I feel like many other activists and organizers here that, you know, they're taunting the people. When we were in Annapolis, you know, the police were, you know, they were so disrespectful and psychotic in their behavior. They totally took up all the seats in the hearing. You know, the politicians were laughing and just saying stuff and, you know, making
they want a war,
like
don't they? They act like they want a war, don't they?
Exactly. Exactly.
They act like they want a war, in my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah.
Again, you know, people organizing, using their voices, trying to use the ballot box, and, you know, like the SCLC.
And that's another thing. Like, people keep talking about voting. They keep talking about all these other different, you know, nonviolent means of, you know, making change. But the system is failing to heed the call of the community.
In Baltimore, like Philadelphia, is a perfect case study in voting more Black people in the offices. It doesn't seem to have an effect on the system because they just simply happily join the system and help perpetuate it, you know. And we certainly see an element of proxy racism. We saw that in Baltimore where the one cop was seen, Black cop was seen beating the Black man at the bus stop. You know, and, you know, we see that again in Philadelphia, and we see it in the Walter Scott killing, where the Black cop, you know, lied on a police report about what happened and what he saw and what he observed. And so,
Well, even if we want to, you know, take that issue of the whole voting piece and look at, you know, Ferguson, you know, people were saying recently that, you know, there was an increase by, you know, two people, you know, on the city council to people of African descent, but those individuals were not conscious folk that were involved in the movement.
One of them was a former mayor or a former city council person. I mean, pretty much establishment African Americans.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. You know, and it's like at a certain point, like we were saying earlier, you know, when people have exhausted, you know, all the various means, you know, people will, you know, defend themselves, defend the community, and, you know, we're calling for cop-free zones, you know, police-free zones, you know, across all communities, and, you know, calling for, you know, a multitude of different, you know, demands, of course, but, you know, people, as like I said, at a certain point, It becomes explosive. And, on the press video and everything today, you know, with the mayor and back, you know, they bumbled and fumbled, you know, through their words and, you know, lied, contradicted themselves, you know, and said so many of different things in that video, that it's shameful, you know, absolutely shameful here, you know, shameful all across the country. You know, and I was even disgusted when Bat said something, you know, in the press conference, you know, all lives matter. And I'm like, no, God damn it. You know, we're talking about Black Lives Matter. You know, specifically in Baltimore, you know, it's Black men that are beat to death and gunned down in Baltimore. You know, nearly 100%, you know, of the time. Over the last 5 years, I think maybe two white men, you know, have been killed. So that means that, you know, at least that most Black men are 17 times more likely to be murdered by, you know, police in Baltimore than a white man, you know, or a person of any other ethnicity. And then people from the Hispanic and Latino community, you know, also suffer, you know, from racism and discrimination and racial profiling.
I mean,
you
just
know, here in Baltimore and across the state.
Just looking at the database, killedbypolice.net, and I have been reading these right wing talking points on these websites talking about more white men are killed by police, and that's just utter nonsense.
Right. Again, and I mean, it's just it's lies and nonsense, and it's people trying to you know, they're just playing with the data. You know, they're just trying to play with information and identity politics, and we already know based on our data and our research here that they killing somebody every 14 days, you know.
Where, in Baltimore?
In the state of Maryland.
Oh, in the state of Maryland. Because I was going to say, killed by police data, national data shows three people a day are being killed.
Yes. Three people a day, you know, nationwide, but specific to here. And, of course, you know, the MSP, you know, every 28 hours. Study really broke down the frequency where people had historically just been going by, you know, the raw number data, and that was just groundbreaking research. Now so many other, you know, professors and people all across the country, you know, are talking about data and information, and you know, that's a good thing. It's going to bring about more transparency. I know the federal government passed a law in December, you know, saying that they want a transparency and that local police departments were going to have to start making reports, where historically that information would have went to, like, the FBI crime reports and all that. It ain't going to the FBI crime reports anymore. It's supposed to be going to the Department of Justice Statistics.
And that's where people are stepping in, like killedbypolice.net and others, you know, the cop watchers out there and those who run the social media profiles, just to let people know the propensity of this violence in the United States. And so, like you said, you know, federal government can't be trusted. State governments can't be trusted with the data. And so, you know, people are being proactive and coming up, you know, with their own solutions and citizen run databases. And that's great. And you're involved in some work like that, right?
In
Baltimore or in Maryland.
Right. And Freddie is actually the sixth black man to be murdered in the area of Baltimore City, Baltimore County region. So this is severe. You know, this is only like what, mid April? You know, and like I said, it's every, you know, 14 days across the state of Maryland, and it's extremely severe. And I was talking to one of the politicians at this DOJ community meeting, and I, you know, was talking about this issue of being a state of emergency and the public health crisis for black men and boys in the United States, and I don't want to leave out women either. But the fact of the matter is that when we had this supposed measles outbreak, you know, at the Disney park, and people, you know, was infected with the measles, all of a sudden there were all of these different things that was put in place, you know, to deal with those issues. And when I confronted this politician about, you know, how that you know, public health model dealt with that as a disease, he was like, oh, well, we don't have like a national coordinated effort, you know, like the CDC. And I'm like, well, what the hell is the Department of Justice then? You know, like, are they not supposed to be, you know, the coordinated effort, you know, to deal with this rampant issue, you know, of police, you know, terrorism and genocide, you know, the same way the CDC deals with, you know, disease? You know, where is the state that we're in a state of emergency? And, you know, it's just ridiculous that, you know, you got politicians and other people that don't even see it that way.
Well, we need to take our last break of the program as we get ready to wrap it up. Do want to, of course, give birthday shout outs for this week before we end the broadcast. But you're listening to Political Prisoner Radio on the Black Talk Radio Network. We'll be right back.
This is Ron Hayes with Hood News, and you're listening to the Black Talk Radio Network. Stay tuned.
When we see our people being brutalized by white bigots, white racists, we think that they are foolish to allow themselves to be beaten and brutalized and do nothing whatsoever to protect themselves. They are foolish. They should have the right to defend themselves against any attack made against them by anyone. If a dog is biting a black man, the black man should kill the dog. Whether the dog is a police dog, a hound dog, or any kind of dog. If a dog is picked on a black man, when that black man is doing nothing but trying to take advantage of what the government says it's supposed to be is, then that black man should kill that dog or any two-legged dog. You'll find, sir, that there will come a time when black people wake up and become intellectually independent enough to think for themselves, as other humans are intellectually independent enough to think for themselves. Then the black man will think like a black man, and he will feel for other black people. And this new thinking and feeling will cause black people to stick together. And then at that point, you'll have a situation where when you attack one black man, you are attacking all black men. And this type of black thinking will cause all black people to stick together. And this type of thinking also will bring an end to the brutality inflicted upon black people by white people. And it is the only thing that will bring an end to it. No federal court, state court, or city court will bring an end to it. It's something that the black man has to bring an end to,
Welcome back to Political Prisoner Radio, and I don't have anything to add to that except for I'm in full agreement with Minister Malcolm on that about bringing an end to it, because it's been going on unabated. And so, again, you know, that is why many of our political prisoners and prisoners of war are behind bars. But we do want to recognize the political prisoner birthdays for this week. We have three coming up this week. I hope I'm pronouncing this man's name correctly, but Kevin Chianella, he has a birthday. It will be on Wednesday, April the 22nd. He received a 2-year prison sentence for his participation in the G20 protests in Toronto in 2010. He was 18 years old at the time, and he got a heftier sentence because he attacked a cop car with a canvas bag full of rocks. He is also stated to have fueled and helped sustain the fire that was set upon another cop car. People getting tired of this. Chianella from Queens was supported in court by his family, among them his 90-year-old grandmother. So his birthday is coming up here on this Wednesday. And Brother Mumia Abu-Jamal, his birthday is on the 24th. You want to tell him a little bit about Brother Mumia? You know, although we've been talking about him a lot here lately, and rightly so, with his medical condition, have you heard any updates on that, Sister Mijo?
I do know that Sister Wadia, Mamiya's wife, was on George Jackson University Radio. Mm-hmm. I didn't get a chance to hear her updates. I do know that there are several events that are scheduled for Mamiya's birthday. And there's still a push to collect donations for Mumia and Mumia's family to have a doctor of his choice. I do know that that is an ongoing campaign to be able to have an independent medical practitioner to help deal with whatever his medical condition is. But of course, you know, all that we're being told right now and that, you know, he had begun showing signs of having diabetes. So, and of course having eczema and other issues. And the pictures that came out were very telling. Of,
yes, they were, man. He looked kind of frail.
Right, right. And, you know, those pictures really sent a strong message to, you know, people in the community and Momia supporters about, you know, the urgency of his medical condition. And, you know, just like we shared last week, you know, he, you know, came right back into, you know, wanting to do, you know, his commentaries and be strong and sustain himself.
Which unfortunately,
through this latest attempt.
Which unfortunately I was going to mention is we don't have a commentary from him this week, and not only from not from him, but not from any, because I usually on Sundays I wanted to start highlighting the work of Prison Radio and put together the Prison Radio mix, where I would mix any of the week's commentaries from any of the political prisoners, and they haven't. There has been no new commentaries posted, so I hope everything is all right with our political prisoners and, you know, with Noel Hammerhand over at Prison Radio. The last one is Janine Phillips Africa. Now, is it Janet that was married to Brother Phil that just passed away? I think it was it Janet Africa. I'm not sure. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think it may be Janet.
Okay. But her birthday, she is part of the Move family, of course, Janine Phillips Africa. Her birthday is Saturday on April the 25th. She served as Minister of Education for the Move organization. Her daughter Life Africa was killed at 3 weeks old by the Philadelphia police. See, police, man, every time something bad happened in our community, usually damn police involved. She was later caught in the police raid of the Move house, where she and eight others were wrongfully convicted of the murder of a police officer who was killed by friendly fire by other cops during the raid. She has served over 30 years in prison despite her innocence. You know, as is the case with the Move 9, all of them were sentenced for killing one cop. Like, they all had pulled the trigger, and he was shot one time, as, you know, has was stated in the piece I just read to you, shot by friendly fire from a sniper, a police sniper, it appears, across the street. So those are your political prisoner birthdays, and they come to you courtesy of the NYC Anarchist Black Cross. They put together the political prisoner of war birthday calendar, and we thank them for that work. Sis, did you have any final comments as we get ready to wrap up?
I do. I actually have an announcement that I received word that Chip Fitzgerald will be coming home on
For real?
Yes. So hopefully we can have hopefully we can have one of his supporters come on the show sometime soon to give us an update on his case.
Man, that's great news, because he just recently had a birthday too.
Yes.
Yeah, he just recently had a birthday, so that's great news. That's great to hear. And I had, you know, just been looking at his photo, because I was reading up about him, and, you know, and no, I'm not bisexual or anything like that, but Chip was a handsome young black man back in the day. You know what I'm saying? Chip Romaine, yeah. That's great news. I'm glad to hear that brother is getting out. Cause I had, I know what it was. I think I had heard or read a report about him going before a parole hearing or something like that. So yeah, that's great news to hear that he's getting out. Always a cause of celebration when one of the prisoners of war are released. And he was active with the Panthers in California, right?
Yes.
Okay. All right, people, that's our program for tonight. We will be back on air next Sunday night at 9 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time, right here on the same station, Black Talk Radio Network. We hope that you will tune in and also bring a friend, as they say. You know, if you think that any other programming on the Black Talk Radio Network is constructive, then please share that with other people. That is the number way, the number one way that our station grows is by word of mouth. Other black people sharing with other black people about this independent black media source. So y'all, I hope that everyone has a productive week. Peace and blessings to all. Good night.